You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 319. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I am recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, three upstanding examples of America's place on the world stage. Out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Hello, hello.
John, I have nothing in particular to say to you right now. Out of Los Angeles, Mr. Ricky Frankel.
How's it going?
And from the Rust Belt, from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Mr. Tom Trauma.
What's up, dudes?
I feel that you should all have to answer to something. I don't exactly know what. We're all watching the news. We see what happens. America.
Oh, you get talked down to by a Canadian again. I can feel it coming.
And
yeah, you know, we were pretty cool when their mayor was smoking crack. I mean, we didn't make that many jokes.
And he died. Like...
Yeah, he was still hilarious. That doesn't make him not hilarious.
We did have a guy like Marion Barry was smoking crack well before Rob Ford was, but still.
Yeah, but he wasn't like as much of a big crazy dynamo as Rob Ford was.
Oh, he was pretty dynamic. But anyway, yeah.
So anyway, sorry. In the first like 5 or 6 seconds of this episode, I was going to make you really justify to the rest of the world everything that's going on with your election. But we apparently have a lot of mail. So if you want to write us mail, this is the Punk News Podcast, by the way. Podcast at punknews.org is how you do that. But Mr. John Gentile, do you want to open up that mailbag and get to some of the stuff?
Listen, we got lots of mail this week. If we don't get to your letter this week, we will get to it next week. We got lots of mail. Thanks for writing in. That's podcast at punknews.org. This is from Doug. Doug said, I listened to your Green Day rant on the podcast a few weeks back about the band being lost with no sense of direction in a midlife crisis spiral. So I decided to give you my perspective. I moved to a town close to Berkeley in 1995, and although I was not a Green Day fan, my favorite local band was NoFX and Denature. I always think of Green Day as MTV top 40 radio hit band, kind of like Backstreet Boys or One Direction. They've always been a hit band, a hit generator band, never taking themselves too seriously, slavishly ripping off Sham 69 and Stiff Little Fingers, and just bashing about having fun around Gilman before their huge sellout. Even when I was listening to them on Lookout Records, they had radio hits. Case in point, the Lookout Records release of Kerplunk featured Welcome to Paradise. Contrary to popular belief, Green Day do play at small house parties with their friends once in a great while, and secret shows under crazy names like the Foxborough Hot Tubs in Oakland and around the East Bay. Some of the members hang out at Rudy's Can't Fail Cafe. Basically, Green Day are like you and me. The only difference is they are millionaires. How much direction would you have if you were 30-something years old and had Green Day's awards, accolades, bank accounts, and strange wool?
30-something?
I think you're like 40-something. Think about it.
Yeah, they're older than I am, whatever.
Think about it. No, really, take a minute and think about it. Someone always wanting your time, bringing up shit from the past, calling you a sellout, and always having their hand out. It would get old really fast. My favorite version of Green Day is Pinhead Gunpowder anyways, so go to your local record shop. Mine is Mod Lang and El Cerrito, and get your Pinhead Gunpowder EPs. If Green Day embraced the Pinhead Gunpowder aesthetic, they might just get back on track. Green Day will never be able to pull the knife out of the back of Gilman Street, no matter how much they try. In my opinion, it's best just to move on and focus on other bands. There are so many great bands out there. Keep up all the good work. All hail Gloss. And that's from Doug.
Yeah, Doug's right for the most part there. I mean, the problem with Green Day or really any of these bands that are big bands is it's always such like a weird tear between like, do we talk about them or do we not? And on the one hand, we sort of have to talk about them because a lot of the times they're gateway bands and people are going to end up on, say, like Punk News and learn about Gloss, for example, because they were searching for Green Day news. And so we always kind of have to play that card or else we get way too insular on it. But on the other hand, you listen to songs like that Green Day single from last week and man, that's not really what I want to be doing with my time. So yeah, it's tough.
This is from Robbie. Robbie's talking about our Punk News Ramones special. We did a Ramones special. That was actually pretty popular. This is from Robbie. Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time writer. I was two episodes behind and a Ramones special, listened to them all yesterday, and felt like making a couple comments. First of all, let's talk about the Ramones as the first punk band and the birth of punk in the UK. The stories I've hear all the time have to do with Richard Hell. In the book Please Kill Me, which was edited by Legs McNeil, it is said that somewhere in 1974, 1975, Malcolm McLaren was in New York when he saw television, then with Richard Hell, playing CBGBs. It's well documented that at the time, television was playing Richard Hell's song Blank Generation, and Hell himself wore tattered clothes that were held together by safety pins. Malcolm McLaren took this back to the UK and put up a line of clothing based on it in his clothing store. It's also said that the song Pretty Vacant by the Sex Pistols was their version of Blank Generation. So England did not have the first punk band. It pretty much stole everything that became punk over there from Richard Hell. As from what punk was first in America, there's a long argument with everyone saying different things. As John pointed out, the term was used on a 1971 flyer for a Suicide show, but also in that 1971 issue. Also in the 1971 was used by Cream magazine in an interview, in an article about Question Mark and the Mysterians. And even though I think 96 Tears is a kick-ass song, I don't think it's punk. That's not to say that I think the Ramones were the first punk band, because that would mean that they would have to throw out all the proto-punk bands, which brings up the question, are the Dead Boys even a punk band? Everyone knows that the Dead Boys started after the Ramones, but their style and many of their songs was from the previous band, Rocket from the Tombs, which actually predates them even knowing about the Ramones. However, being from Cleveland and a stone's throw away from Detroit, they would have known all about MC5 and the Stooges. Punk magazine didn't feature the Ramones until issue 3, but it had already featured Lou Reed, Patti Smith, and television. So really, the use of the words punk rock and this style of music was both being presented and passed around before the Ramones in the U.S., but in the end, that really doesn't matter, because of regardless where punk started, the Ramones did it better. You don't have to call them the first to say that they are the best. I think the Ramones week was a good show, and I hope you do another one next year. If you do, I would recommend playing Bye Bye Baby by Ronnie Spector and Joey Ramone. It's one of my favorite Ramone-related tracks.
I don't think we ever said the Ramones were the first punk band.
I think I did.
They were. My version of it was that they kind of codified it. You know what I mean? They kind of put it together, the modern formula.
Really, the way more interesting is, like, what I would want to know is, like, could Sonic Reducer have existed without the Ramones? Like, that song, right? Like, what would, like, I mean, I get the lineage of the Dead Boys, but would that record have materialized had there been nothing going on in New York? That is a fascinating question. And I think
I was just going to
suggest we go back in time and assassinate someone and see what happens, but give me a real answer.
Well, you know, the Dead Boys were definitely closer to what I would say the New York Dolls tree. You know, if we were to make it a classic rock analogy, the Ramones were the Beatles, and they had a certain formula for the songs. And then there was the bands like the Dead Boys that were more like the Stones, that kind of had the more of a rock and roll swagger, I would say. But yeah, I would say they're closer to, I would say the Dead Boys, yeah, are a more natural progression from the stuff that was going on in Detroit than maybe the Ramones, even though they played together and were sort of complimentary.
Okay, let's see here. Maybe we'll read two more letters, and then we'll save the rest for next week. We got a lot of letters. This is from Roger, and he's talking about No Means No. He also goes by Tuffy on Twitter.
That's him?
Hey, guys, I've been meaning to write in a few times, but this subject can't pass without me putting my two cents in. No Means No retiring is truly a sad day in music. I am more bummed that I won't be able to see them live than to hear new music. They put on a great show. I saw the Hanson Brothers, their Ramones core band, not too long ago, and it was amazing. No Means No is a band that I think gets better the further you get into their catalog. Most bands burn bright in the beginning and then fade away, but No Means No, not with them. To me, they have the quintessential Canadian band, but not just the quintessential Canadian punk band. He gave a list of his favorite tracks. I'll just name a couple. He's a big fan of My Roommate Is Turning Into a Monster, Dad, Real Love, Off Wrong. He recommends It's Catching Up, The Tower, Two Lips, Two Lungs, and One Tongue, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And anyway, Speaking of the Ramones, remember to check out the Ramones core band, the Hanson Brothers. And he says, cheers. P.S. I love the pod, and it always gets to the top of the rotation when an episode comes online. And P.P.S. Adam and Tricky Ricky, you need to get way more into High on Fire and get more of it into your life.
That was such a difficult episode.
And then let's see here. I'm going to read this one and then one other short one. This is from Neil. Neil's the English guy that yelled at us, as opposed to Rich, the English guy that compliments us. This is from Neil.
English people are so non-threatening, even when they're yelling at us, though.
This is from Neil. Hello, chaps. It's me again, Liverpool Neil, 53 years old and mad as hell.
Actually,
I'm not mad at all this week. I want to congratulate you all on the Ramones podcast. It was really well done. It's difficult to tackle a subject as huge as this, but you all did it very well. I especially love the first bank of rarely heard Ramones songs. Great unusual choices. However, the second batch, that actually made me question my love of music entirely. Everyone was worse than the last. The DD track sounded like Bobby Boris Pickett doing the Monster Mash. The Joey one with Hippie on drums could have been used to clear a bar at closing time. The Spider-Man cover was embarrassing, and you couldn't hear Joey on Rockaway Beach, on the Rockaway Beach cover with General Johnson. As for the drum off, the answer... Oh, I got to read one other thing, too. Actually, I'm going to pause Neil's letter and read this thing real quick. This was a message that I got on Twitter, and it was, John, this is someone like quoting me, John, we're not going to play a bunch of... hold on, let me just pull up real quick. I'll read it.
John, are you having a stroke?
Yeah. Well, I almost... I'm trying to pull something up on Twitter. Here we go. All right. He said on Twitter... Oh, man, I get a lot of Twitter messages. Man.
It's all hate.
Damn.
You're weird.
Damn. Ah, well. Basically, he said, John, quoting John... Oh, here we go. This is from Eric. Oh, no, it's not from Eric. It's from someone else. Anyway, whoever wrote this, thanks. John Gentile at the start of the Ramones podcast. We're not going to play the hits. John Gentile at the end of the podcast. Here's Blitzkrieg Bop four times in a row. So anyway, this is Neil commenting on the Ramones drum off. As for the drum off, the answer is easy. Tommy was the best by a long mark. The only true Ramones drummer. He pioneered the drum sound and was the best at it. Second was Richie, very close to Tommy's style, very tight and powerful drummer. Marky was the third. Too damn fast, and it didn't sound like the Ramones at all. Last was Elvis. Oh my God, how he made it into the Ramones, and how did he make a living playing the drums all these years? He was a half beat off the whole song, and it sounded like he was playing cardboard boxes. What? I think it might be just because we pulled it from a bootleg.
Judging the quality of the recording.
What I found very interesting in the same song from four different eras was how Joey's voice changed from beginning to end. Song started off with emotion, and by the end, he was merely going through the motions. And I think that's true. I think it's a good comment. He sounded totally bored stiff in the last two versions that you played. And by the way, Ricky, it would have been nice in that review of Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh if you had described the subject matter of the song. Fill him in, John. I think we could talk about that a little bit.
Wait, I thought Bonzo Goes to Pittsburgh was about... it's obviously about Ronald Reagan, but it was about him visiting the Queen, wasn't it?
I think
of England.
No, I think it's Germany or something.
Germany, yeah.
Is it because he's in front of the Berlin Wall? But he's talking about the lyrics are about him going to the Queen.
Well,
and there's no Queen in Germany.
Well, Ricky, you can do your homework and report back to us next week.
Don't read in the lyrics too much.
I'm confused.
A little about my history with the Ramones, if you indulge me. Being older, I was first introduced to the Ramones in May 1977. I was 14, had never listened to much music. My older brother listened to Yes and prog rock and some glam that I just wasn't into. But a friend of his came over and brought the first Ramones and Clash albums and a fantastic punk album called New Wave. I was in love with them from the first listen, and I taped them and played them all summer in 1977 on my crappy little cassette player. I didn't know anything about the punk movement at that point, and I really didn't call myself a punk for about a year, but the music just spoke to me. I saw the Ramones five times throughout the years, including that time on the same tour that Tom Trauma was talking about when they played with Social Distortion. They were always brilliant, but by the end they were making the cardinal mistake that a lot of punk bands make, playing too fast. The live versions of Blitzkrieg Bop you played underline that. The first one was recorded for the album It's Alive, and the last day of 1977 is the slowest, but, b- but by best of far. The most powerful and the most punchy. A lot of others sound like joke covers, and It's Alive is the best live album of all time. No contest. Anyway, great job, guys. I really enjoyed the show. If any of you are in Chicago, the drinks are on me. Stay free, Neil.
I'm coming for Screeching Weasel, Neil. I might take you up on that.
I think he, if you go on the you can find what he, the background on it, obviously on, of the song on, Wikipedia, but it's basically, it is about Ronald Reagan going back to Germany, on like a European like tour. And, it's a whole thing. We don't need to get into it, but there, it's out there.
And this is from Sean, and we'll save the rest of the mail for next week. Sean says, "Hey guys, I'd like to follow up on an email I sent last week. I might have come off as a tad aggressive. I was still in a bit of a death grips have after getting to see them at Riot Fest a few days prior. Also, I'd like to clarify that the Show Me the Body is not my band. Anyway, if I haven't completely alienated you, I suggest you all check out Death Grips. You guys do a Death Grips week next year. To John's point about the guy from No Doubt, I think I do reserve the right not to care. Here's my example. As much as I love the Dead Kennedys, I'll probably never see them live on account of Jello Biafra not being in the band. I'm sure that their new singer is great, but Jello is responsible for so much of the character of the band that seeing Dead Kennedys without him wouldn't really be the same. However, if all that had changed was their drummer, I wouldn't think twice about seeing them live. How does it relate to Gabriel McNair? He doesn't hold the band together. If he left, they would still get another trombonist. I don't follow the No Doubt closely enough for that to make a difference. On the other hand, if Gwen Stefani left the band, love her or hate her, it would be a big deal because she adds character to the band. Anyway, thanks for writing in, Sean. And listen, I seriously don't know why I'm the only person that's interested that Gabriel McNair is in all these different bands playing all the music that people know so well. I don't know how I'm the only person that's interested in that. And listen, so we're going to play a song and then we're going to come back. The song that we're going to play is a guy called Gabriel McNair covering the Scatolites doing Guns of Navarone. And I think some guy called like Tony Kanal and Adrian Young and like somebody named Gwen Stefani. I think they might be on the track. I don't know who those people are, but this is Gabriel McNair live doing Guns of Navarone.
Dear God, John.
Are you gonna
let this die ever?
No, I don't know why people have such a hatred towards poor Gabriel McNair.
Well, hey, since we're going down rabbit holes, all the guys from Green Day were born in 1972, which makes them 44 years old.
And just
one
real
year
quick,
older than yours truly.
Oh, also just to go on his Dead Kennedys point, I did see
we can't let anything go tonight. We just can't let anything
go. No. The current Dead Kennedys show, I saw them. I've actually seen them twice. I'm at a festival, and then I saw them in a small venue. It's not you kind of stand there like wondering, like, yeah, this could be better if Jell-O were here, but you just kind of lower your standards a little bit, and it's okay. It's not a bad show. It's just like, eh, you know, that's it.
I saw him in the late 90s. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean...
It's,
least you hear those songs live. That's why I went.
It is strange when you have three quarters of the band, but it still feels kind of...
Better than a stick in the eye, says Ricky Frankel.
But the guy was saying that he'd still love the Dead Kennedys without their drummer, but man, I don't know. D.H. Plagiar is a pretty good drummer.
But he's not their only drummer.
Fucking good.
No, he was the drummer for the majority.
All I know, if No Doubt kicked Gabriel McNair out of the band, I would stop seeing No Doubt. I would throw away all my No Doubt CDs.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to stop seeing him even without them kicking him out. So I will one-up you.
So anyways, we should probably talk about some of the news and stuff that happened this week instead of everyone trying to reiterate their shit. So here we go.
Adam White coming out angry this week, I'll tell
God
you.
God damn it. We have a duty.
To double back again for something.
A duty to the fucking news. So here we go. The first thing that we're going to talk about here. Every year, the World Inferno Friendship Society has a big blowout bash called Hollow Mass. So they have released the details for this year's festivities. The concert is going to take place on October 31st at the Warsaw in Brooklyn. The band has stated that special guests will appear alongside during the performance. Opening acts are going to be the band's Teenage Halloween and Guignol? Is that what you say, John?
I always get it wrong.
Hignol. All right, sure.
It's French for bloody theater.
It starts with a G. Anyways, that band features former Inferno member Franz Nicolai, and the band will play portions from Fight Dirty, which is the collaboration between Hignol and Mischief Brew's Eric Peterson, who sadly passed away earlier this year. So you can find a little bit more details on that over at the Punk News. But John, you've been to a Hollow Mass or two, have you not?
I've been to three Hollow Masses, and we're running late tonight, so I'll go as quick as I can. The first Hollow Mass I went to might be the greatest show I ever saw. Some Inferno's Hollow Masses are always super special shows, but sometimes they're mega special and sometimes they're super special. The last two were super special, and that the band played for like 2.5 hours. And they do a whole bunch of songs they don't usually do. They also do Rise Me Up, which is a song they only do at Hollow Mass, which is cool. It's one of my favorite Inferno songs. First Hollow Mass I saw was amazing. Like, they had this whole story about how Grace Talicious had passed away. And so I got to the venue early, and there's a big line outside. People are waiting. There's a hearse outside, right? And then on the website they said, bring flowers. And so only me, being the dork that I am, brought flowers, and I think one other person did, right? And the doors open up, and you go inside, and it's like the whole venue is set up like a funeral home, and there's a casket there with a woman in the casket. And I looked real closely. I think she was an actress, because I could see her breathing just a little bit, but she didn't move the entire night. And only me and one other person put flowers down. And so the story was how the story of the show was how Grace Talicious had passed away, and Jack Terrycloth, the singer, had never made the moves on her like he wanted to, or got to know her like he wanted to. And so near the end of the concert, they closed the casket and they brought it up on stage. Meanwhile, the concert was like 2.5 hours. And Jack, they start doing Rise Me Up. And I'm thinking, are they going to have her come out of the casket? But they didn't. And I wonder, maybe it's because people didn't bring enough flowers or something. Oh, they were even handling out to funeral cards. It was like totally creepy. So they played for 2.5 hours, and they did Rise Me Up. It was an amazing, amazing show. And at the end, they had a full choir come out, and they did a couple of songs with a full legit choir, not like punk kids acting like a choir, like an actual church choir singing with World Inferno. And it was amazing. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. So this one's going to be mega special, although I think this one will be tinged with a hint of sadness. And it'll be interesting how the band chooses to take it. Of course, people know Eric Peterson quite sadly passed away. And so the Hignol portion is going to be kind of sad, because it's going to be basically dedicated to Eric Peterson. And who knows what they're going to do. And it's going to be pretty emotional. The idea with Hallow Mass is it's Samhain. It's, you know, the Mexican Day of the Dead. It's like that's the day when dead people come back along with the Great Pumpkin, if you will. And that's like when you can communicate with them and celebrate with them and stuff. And I'll be interested to see if World Inferno addresses that with Eric Peterson, or maybe they'll decide that's off limits. It'll be very interesting to see how they treat that. And I'm almost definitely going to go. Even though it's on a Monday night, I'm almost definitely going to go. It's going to be awesome.
You know, if I were on the East Coast, I would be so conflicted about either going to this or going to Fest every year.
World Inferno.
I mean,
World
that
Inferno.
Both are insanely tempting.
World Inferno.
See, I feel like Fest is a young man's game. It's so much running around. As opposed to this, which is, you know, just one show.
Yeah.
It's an event. It is an event.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I would want to go to the Dead Milkman Graveyard show.
That was last week.
Yeah. But,
Well, yeah. Hall & Nash always sounds like a good time. So, if you can get out to that, you should definitely go out to that. Let's move on, because we have lots of stuff that we want to talk about here. Ricky, you are super excited about this.
Yes.
We bummed you out pre-recording, and we didn't mean to.
I know. Do you want me to read it?
I want you to react to it. I'll read it. Okay. So the AV Club has premiered the new Dead to Me track. It is the title track from their upcoming EP called I Wanna Die in Los Angeles. It is due out on October 21st via Fat Records. You can find a link to listen to the song over on Punk News, or you can go find it on the AV Club or YouTube or whatever else. But Ricky, first of all, like, reactions, new Dead to Me.
Okay, so when I saw them in June, they played this, and it was so loud that it was kind of hard to tell like what the song was going to, how the song kind of came together. I heard more of Chicken's vocals than Jack's, I remember. I'm not being hyperbolic here. This could be my favorite song of the year. I loved this. I loved it. Let's just keep in mind, this is the first song that we have heard with Dead to Me with Jack back in the band since Cuban Ballerina, or maybe an EP after that. Maybe. I love this. What they did vocally was so great. You have Chicken's like hard vocals, then you have Jack kind of smoothing it out and with his softer vocals. I love this. I mean, this I can't wait to hear the other two songs. They played one other one at that show I was talking about. I mean it. I really, really love this song. What about you guys?
So I'll pop in. I've listened to it like once, and it was an hour ago, and I enjoyed it, but I've just had that thing where I haven't heard it enough that it is making any kind of mental imprint on me. I will probably love this eventually. I loved Cuban Ballerina and I loved Little Brother. So when that was the name of the EP, right? So when Jack was in Dead to Me, like that was really the only time when Dead to Me was, I mean, I didn't mind them afterwards, but like I can recall just like out of memory certain songs off of both those records, because it was all fairly distinctive, and I feel like a big part of the distinctiveness was Jack's vocals being in it. So him being back in the band is a huge deal to me. That said, I don't super remember this song, and I listened to it a little while
honestly,
ago.
Honestly, I'm not kidding. I've listened to this song 10 times since it was released yesterday. And God, I have one other thought I was gonna say. I lost it. Anyway, John, Tom, anything?
What am I supposed to take from this? Like, why is this? No, I'm being serious. Like, I'm not making fun of it. I'm like, what am I supposed to, like Black Flag? You take out how it's nasty, how it's kind of crazy. Misfits, you take out how it's spooky, how it's hard as hell. Melvin, you take out how it's hard as hell, how it's weird. You know, what am I to take out of this? Because I've never been a fan of Beard Punk. I'm not necessarily an anti fan. I'm just not really a fan. What am I supposed to take out from this?
Is this Beard Punk?
I think it's Beard Punk.
No, I think this is a.
Well, what band, is it then? Is this, what do you call
it? Just melodic punk. Well,
that's
I mean,
beard
this is
punk.
Just,
that's beard punk.
I didn't know
isn't
they were
beard
I,
punk like gruff punk.
Yeah, I thought
that's what this is,
anyway,
isn't it?
This is a super tight band. I mean, one of the live and in the studio, you can hear it from any of their albums. What I was going to say earlier, Adam, is if you go back and listen to Moscow Penny Ante, it's actually quite good.
You know, the funny thing, Ricky, you know, I don't know anything about this band. I got to say, I don't know a lot of the later era fat bands. You know, I was like a 90s fat guy. Their album titles are like all super pretentious. They sort of turn me off.
No.
But I'm not. I don't know anything about him. I'm going old school. I didn't prepare very well for tonight. So
I see.
I'm telling you, this band is awesome, and you can see that this might be another band that a lot of the punk rock scene can get behind and be cool with.
Ricky,
I will check it out, Ricky, because I always say, for a young man, I always feel like you have good taste, so I'm gonna check it out,
Ricky.
Just based on your word, and if I don't like it, I'm gonna fly to LA and kick you right square in the nuts.
John,
you know what? At least I'll see you in person.
Just kidding. Yeah, we'll have a good
time. I want to know what Ricky takes from Dead to Me. Ricky, what do you take from Dead to Me?
You know what? Well, one, they were one of the first. They were definitely one of the first bands I remember thinking like I should check out labels, and that was like in high school. Just in general, and I don't know. I think their melodies are fantastic. I think that the vocal kind of volleys between Chicken and Jack are fantastic. The guitar work is, it's not like super, you know, complex like a Wilhelm Scream, but they do it just right. I don't know. This is a band that just comes together and writes some fantastic songs. They're a perfect team for me, at least.
So, like, what I've always got out of them, John,
mm-hmm.
This is why I only really apply to it to the record that Jack was involved. And I was really following them because I was following Jack. And what I like about Jack vocally is, I guess, and in particular on Dead to Me and on what was the One Man Army?
Yeah.
Were not so much Toy Guitar. I don't actually get this out of Toy Guitar at all. But the way that he sings on those, he's got a little bit of crooner in him. Like, there's a little bit of that kind of like Morrissey, you know, theatric, you know, over enunciation in his singing that I think is actually quite distinct as far as these kind of like a skate punk band goes. And to hear that interplayed off of Chicken's vocals, which are really more like what you would expect, I think, of a band of this style, I always thought was very interesting. And that's what that's what I like about Dead to Me, and that's actually what I always really liked about One Man Army, is that just I think Jack's vocals in those bands is incredibly interesting. Why I don't get that from Toy Guitar, I have no idea. But I always thought that was neat. So anyways, that's my read.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need to keep going on this too much, but I love this song. I can't wait for the EP to be out, and hopefully that album that they announced like 2 years ago will be out soon.
So we're talking about Dead to Me. We're going to keep talking about Fat Records here. So the website Consequence of Sound is currently streaming NoFX's new album, which is titled First Ditch Effort. That thing is out on October 7th, which is that today yet? That's in 2 days. So it should be out by the time hear this podcast. And it's out on Fat Records. So, you know, by the time you listen to this podcast, just go listen to the record. But if you're somehow listening to this before we release it, go to Consequence of Sound and you can find it there. but anyways, so yeah. So the new NoFX record is hearable at this point in history. Has anyone listened to this thing? I have. Yes. I have a reaction, but I'll circle back to it. What do you got, Ricky?
I got to tell you, I really liked it. I think it's definitely, I didn't like Self-Entitled that much, but this one, you know, has some really, NoFX really kind of, you can tell that they really put a lot of time into this one. It's very autobiographical. They get kind of a little on the darker side of things. The one thing I was hoping for, I think, you know, this is going back to like Against Me really and like how they release songs. I was a bit thrown off with the first song that they released called 6 Years on Dope. That was kind of more thrashy, and that was not, and although I think that might be my favorite song on the album, it was not representative of the whole album at all. It's more, that's probably the most like mosh pit inducing song on the album. But I gotta tell you, I really like Transvest Light. I think Generation Z is really, really good. I'm sorry, Tony. Oh my God. I mean, it gets really, they go way emotional on this one. This is the first NoFX record I think people should, at least since the last one, will be into.
I haven't listened yet, Tom. But I am looking forward to listening to it. Tom. You know, NoFX to me has been a series of highs and lows, and I think they've been on a little bit of a low lately, so I'm hoping this is a little bit of a return to form, and I'm looking forward to listening to it, but I'm not listening to it until I get my copy on Friday.
I thought it was pretty good. People sometimes complain like it's too autobiographical of Fat Mike, but I think that's kind of the most interesting thing. Is I think it's interesting. Mike's an interesting guy, so it's interesting to hear his thoughts, and it's also interesting to hear him juggle new punk ethics with old punk ethics. And he's one of the few guys that kind of merges both, if you will. A lot of artists either pick their camp, like they're old school punk rockers or they're strictly new school punk rockers, where NoFX, maybe they lean more towards the old to a degree, but they do merge the old and the new, philosophies of both punk rock. And I thought it's quite clever how they do that. I like how NoFX pays tribute to the old punk rock bands. There's a little bit of a Screamers homage in there, a little bit of a Germs homage. And also a Girls Just Want to Have Fun homage, which I thought was funny. NoFX is one of the few bands that I think is able to really juggle whimsy and funniness with serious subject matter, and I think they do that well without undercutting either. Adam White, what are your thoughts?
I think it's very interesting. I mean, I've been looking through the past, all the NoFX records since Pump Up the Valium, just because I feel that like Valium was probably... was some sort of turning point record for me. Not that it was particularly good or anything like that, but that marks like a demarcation in my mind between like old NoFX and modern NoFX. So I've been looking over the last handful of records, and while on one hand I want to say maybe they weren't all that great, every time I look at the track list to any of these, I instantly latch on to like five or six songs on each of them that I really, really like. So I don't know if from an album standpoint they've been all that consistent up until now, but damn, they've written some good songs between now and then. So I'm all about that. This one, I've burned through it twice. I have really mixed feelings on this. I don't dislike it at all, but it's there's a part of me that wishes a lot of it sounded more like 6 Years on Dope, because I think good song.
Me too.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it is an incredibly like it is a disarmingly personal record for NoFX, and there's just coming from my weird perspective, there's a lot of dad stuff on here.
Do you think it was a coincidence that the book would come out when the same time that these songs were released? Or
no, I don't think so. I think that the band is in this like oddly confessional mode right now, which is interesting. But it's not. I mean, we're not. I don't want to give anyone the impression we're going emo here. But the there's seriously moments when I was listening to this record, and I was like in my office and doing work, and I'm like I feel like I'm getting sort of choked up listening to this NoFX record, and that's really weird. And it may have been the song that's on there for Tony Sly, but it was not so much like there's a lyric somewhere on the record, and I can't recall it right now what it was, but something about just like now that he has kids, he's questioning how he's, I don't know how he was, I forget was, if it was about drugs or whatever, or just living dangerously, but like, you know, like questioning how he's approaching that choice to make sure that he's not, you know, dead for his own kids, or there's some sort of like, there's some lyrical nod to that on one of the songs. I don't at all recall what the actual lyric is at the moment, but I'm just like, oh God, I'm like, this is hitting me. And it's just like, I'm probably full of like all these fucking dad hormones right now, so that's why it's doing it. But I'm like,
hormones, baby.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, I'm like this NoFX record is killing me in a really weird way. So yeah, it's weird. Tom, you've spawned. I want to know what,
Well, I just am looking at my son. My oldest son just started his senior year of high school, and looking at his senior pictures.
Yeah, go listen.
He's a freaking man. He's taller than I. You know, he's taller than I am.
I'm imagining Tom Trauma like sitting like in like his living room. He's got like his big headphones on. You see like the NoFX record behind him, and he's like dabbing his eye as he looks at his pictures of his family.
So what you're saying is pretty much the new NoFX record is like Cats in the Cradle.
Yes, it is exactly like Cats in the Cradle is what I'm.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. I haven't listened to it yet, but you know, Mike's always had a penchant for the confessional. You know, we were speaking a little bit earlier about My Orphan Year, that song about his parents dying. It's freaking brutal. You know, he was capable of that. But
there's another one about there's a song.
The Post Rehab record is always interesting, even if it's
He does go into, I think his there is a whole song about another song about his dad called Happy Father's Day on this.
But yeah, it happens a little. You know, a little introspection is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth listening if you've like written off NoFX in recent years.
I haven't written them off.
Oh, no, sorry. I was speaking rhetorically to the listener. I don't think.
Yeah, no. Yeah. They're one of those bands that I've grown old with.
Cats in the Cradle. I listened to them
when I was a
little
teenager.
Boy Blue and the Man in the Moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. We'll have a good time then. You know, we'll have a good time.
Bump Up the Volume is the album where I wrote them off, where I'm like, this band's no good anymore. And I'm so happy that we've gotten like another 15 years out of them. So
speaking,
hope we get 20 more.
Yeah. So speaking of NoFX, we're going to talk about one of NoFX's rivals right now. So La Tigra have reunited to record a new single. So during an interview on the Talk House podcast, Kathleen Hanna stated that La Tigra have recorded a new song. No other information about it except for that the song has been recorded. It exists. And it's going to appear sometime in October or November. Now, she clarified that La Tigra doesn't really have any plans to tour or make a full-length album or anything like that. But, you know, the band has got together and done a song. So, you know, if you were a fan of La Tigra or Bikini Kill or the Kill Rockstar stuff, that's coming out soon. Now, I of course, put this right after the NoFX story in the lineup because... John, but we were talking about beef songs.
I love me a beef song. Let me tell you.
And this one did not come up in our discussion of beef songs a few months back.
And not only that, this is a back and forth and a back and forth, the best kind.
Yeah. There was some serious beef at a time between NoFX and La Tigra. I guess between really NoFX and Bikini Kill that then became NoFX and La Tigra. So is everyone aware of the beef, of the story here?
I mean, I read through it before we started.
So there's
it was really just a personal thing more than anything.
Well, here's what I understand went on. So back in 1990, well, okay, so back in 92, the song.
Holy shit, 92.
So,
even I was young.
So yeah, so NoFX. I forget what album Lisa and Louise was on.
That was on the.
Is it S&M Airlines?
No, later.
Heavy Petting Zoo.
No, earlier.
No.
Heavy Petting Zoo. Yeah.
So, Lisa and Louise.
God, if I'm wrong, I know people are yelling.
I'm just guessing.
I don't. Hang on a second.
I'm looking at it. No, keep going.
Ricky, you're probably thinking of a handful of songs that they have that have those similar characters in them.
It was on White Trash, Two Heebs and a Bean.
Nice.
Okay. Anyway, so
that's a good.
So that is a song. If you have not heard it, and I am. What?
No, he just said White Trash, Two Heaps, and a Bean.
I'm sorry, Adam.
All right. So anyway, so it's a song about a woman who decides to become a lesbian after being hurt by a man. So it is in this category of NoFX songs that are there's this whole collection of NoFX songs that are like oddly graphic lesbian songs, I guess you can call them, that I mean, fit within NoFX's propensity to take all of Mike's fetishes and to, you know, and to blow them out into full musical numbers. But yes, is probably not like the most sensitive thing if, let's say, you're an LGBT person. Now, Kathleen Hanna did not get the joke out of that song, and she apparently confronted Fat Mike backstage at one point when NOFX and Bikini Kill were touring together. So this became the song, or this was responded to with the song Kill Rock Stars that was on So Long and Thanks for All the Shoes, 1996. There's some lyrics in the song Kill Rock Stars that are pretty, they're pretty mean. There was a confrontation at one point between Kathleen Hanna and Courtney Love, and there is allusions to that fight in the song where anyways,
sucks to have to wait 4 years to be dissed.
Yeah, like, so
I can't wait for the new record so I can hear what kind of shit they're gonna
well talk. Because then it took a few more years, so then after Bikini Kill split up and Kathleen formed La Tigra, on their debut album the first track on it was called Decepticon, and Decepticon has like I don't know if the whole thing's about it, but like there's like a whole verse that is like hating on Fat Mike, and so that would have been 1999 when that happened. So, you know, there's, and that one is, it is pretty direct. I don't know if it talks directly to Mike, but like it's, you know, your lyrics are dumb like a linoleum floor is one of the things that's in it. So
I want to walk on it, walk all over you. I love that phrase when she's like, I want to walk on it, walk all over you. I love that.
Yeah, so I don't know if there was another response out of Fat Mike from that, but it went back and forth for a little while. So I have no opinion on this beef. It seems like I don't need to be involved in it, and it's like from 15 years ago. But hey, beefs are fun.
Wait, what if we reignited the beef?
So I was going to say the new La Tigra song is not like continuing the beef, is it? Are you speculating?
Well, I don't know. And
it's called, the new song is called I Hope Fat Mike Gets Cancer. I'm not sure if it's continuing the beef or not.
But in the hopes of reuniting a beef, for no other reason than musical beefs are great, here is from 1999, Decepticon by La Tigra.
Who took the bomb? I'm not afraid of the dark.
All right, John, we're back. Let's talk about nudes.
Nudes.
Do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. This is your story, man.
I would point out that having a beef song written towards you or a diss track is sort of a compliment in that it's like you're worthy of battling. You know what I mean? So to a degree, and someone spent time thinking about you, and it's a compliment to a degree. So anyways, a little while ago, Iggy Pop, he showed up at the New York Academy of Art figure drawing class. He stripped down to his au natural state, and a bunch of students drew nude sketches of him. But I guess you wouldn't call them nude sketches, figure drawing sketches. Well, those are going to be released in the Brooklyn Academy of Art. You can go see them starting November 4th through March 26th. It's going to be called Iggy Pop Life Class, and it's basically new drawings of Iggy Pop. Iggy had a great quote. He said, oh, and also it's going to be released as a book, and you can get naked drawings of Iggy in a book. And actually, Iggy had an interesting quote. He also did something very interesting at the end. Here's what he said. It wasn't about my winky or anything. I love that. It wasn't about my winky or anything. It was just a documentation of what's left of me. It's not the sort of thing that I'm going to start doing as a weekend job. And this is interesting. I did it once at the start of my career, and I was also photographed, also without clothes, by Bill King and Gerard Malanga from the Warhol Factory. So it was time. I did not know that. That's very interesting. You know, and of course, the Warhol Factory was famous for a lot of shenanigans going on over that place. Anyways, I think this is very interesting for a couple of reasons, but I think the most interesting reason is from a scientific scale. I mean, Iggy Pop, you know, there's a famous quote, no one expected Iggy Pop to outsurvive everybody, but he did. Iggy Pop, you know, he's getting older now, but even up through his late 60s, he was still a dynamo on stage, a person able to do physical things that people half his age would be out of energy doing, and Iggy Pop seemed to do it without any sort of wear and tear on his body. Behind the scenes, maybe not so much, but who knows? So from a pure scientific standpoint, I think a figure study of Iggy Pop is probably about as legit and about as worthy of a thing of study and attention that you could get. You know what I mean? Who's another musician? Like, I don't know.
Gabriel McNair?
Yeah. I'll even say Gabriel McNair. Iggy Pop is better than Gabriel McNair because Gabriel McNair plays his trombone. He's not known as like a physical guy. Iggy Pop, he's an interesting looking person. He's got that thing where his elbows like will go way past a flat plane. Adam, Tom, and Ricky, if you hold your arm out straight, can you make your arm bend past 0 degrees? I can't. But Iggy Pop can go to negative
69 years old.
Can go to negative 20 or 30 degrees. So from a pure scientific standpoint, I think it'd be very interesting. Although I was looking at some of the pictures online, and they really weren't. I just thought they were just kind of like sketches.
Well, and you know, he said it isn't all about the winky, and I hate to disagree with Mr.
You think it's all about the winky?
But I'm afraid it is all about the winky because there's a couple of things I know about Iggy Pop. One, he's 5'1", and the rumor has always been that the guy's a human tripod. I would love to see this confirmed or denied.
You actually can. I'm looking.
I left you guys speechless.
I think he's taller than 5'1", though, to tell you the truth.
Well, he's got that song. I'm only 5'1".
Yeah, but I think he's tall. I think he's like 5'6" or 5'7".
All right. I got his wiki page open right now. He's 69 years old, though.
Yeah, I had no. I really had no feeling about this at all. I mean, I kind of.
You're not going to buy a book with black and white nudes of an old man, Ricky? What's wrong with you?
No, it's not on my. it's not on the top of my list.
I'm looking at a photo of the class. I think it's cool that Iggy is fearless, man. And Henry Rollins got a quote: "Is a leopard doesn't know it has its spots." Like Iggy Pop doesn't know that he's Iggy Pop, or maybe he doesn't know. Like he's just being Iggy Pop, and that's awesome. But there's this funny. I'm flipping through the pictures. There's a picture of Iggy hanging out with the class, and he's sitting next to all the students and everything. And he's got like a shirt on, but you can tell he's not wearing any pants. So he's like sitting next to these two women, and he's got a shirt on, but you can tell he's out natural below. And it just iconic Iggy Pop. I think Iggy Pop's cool, man.
You know, I saw the Stooges a few years ago, and they were really good. He's still a formidable performer.
Adam White, if you got a phone call and they said, we want you to come draw Iggy Pop nude, would you do it?
Like, to draw it? I mean, I guess, just to be part of the team, you know? Tom, I am confirming for you that with a few...
That he's a human tribe?
With a few clicks of the mouse, you can totally go check out Iggy Pop's wang on the internet. So
I'm afraid to Google Iggy Pop's Wang. I'll wait till I'm at work tomorrow. Use the company computers.
It's on my search history now, so.
How's it look, Adam? What do you give it on a scale of 1 to 10? It's older and wrinklier now.
I feel like
isn't that
warnings before this episode or something?
God, every time I'm on, we end up talking about
I need my
wank.
Safe space.
Isn't that a part of art though? Is like when you do draw winkies, you're not supposed to make them abnormally large or even like normal size. Like when you look at all those like ancient Greek statues, the winkies are always pretty small, but like they do that on purpose because it's not supposed to be about the winky. So like, can we not trust like these drawings of Iggy Pop's winky?
The famous statue of David, if you look down at the bottom, written in Latin, is "I'm a grower, not a shower." I don't know if you knew that or not, but
well, I'm going to make a lame seg. Speaking of growing, Amoeba Records is going to start selling weed. So the famed record store Amoeba Records Berkeley has announced that they are going to start selling. John, this is all your writing, so I don't feel like reiterating all of your fun language, but I'm fine. Start selling those funky greens. The company has applied for a marijuana sales license. They did so last fall, actually, and it was granted recently. So they are apparently going to start selling it in the jazz section.
Adam, can you read that last sentence, please?
Sorry. The company plans to sell his Imperial Majesty's herb in the jazz section. How long did you work on this article?
The Grateful Dead record sales are up 600%.
Now, I don't really know enough about what state the like Californian weed universe is. Ricky is probably the closest.
Ricky, will you start buying your weed there, or are you going to stick with your regular sources?
This is just for the Berkeley one. So this is 400 miles north of me, so I won't be able to get there.
If you got a guy that delivers, I mean, I
imagine Ricky like driving up there in like a van. It's got like rainbows painted on the side
and there's smoke billowing out.
You guys don't understand, like it's not hard to get down here either. I've shopped at this place many times. I was not surprised about this. Thinking back up, when I saw this, I'm like, huh, this is just happening now. As of weed in California.
Yeah, you used to have to go in the alley behind. Now you can just get it right on the shelves.
No, actually, I'm not kidding. We would go down there. My friends and I would go down there when I was living up there. We would just go down there and like, there's a place called People's Park where like, it's basically a bunch of like homeless people that are like ex-hippies. And the cops don't do anything about them. They just leave them alone. They're all doing drugs, but they're peaceful. And we literally have had people come up to us and with like just a handful of marijuana and just like, hey man, can I get like $15 for this or something like that? And we're like, where did that come from? Anyway.
What is a nug, Ricky? I don't know what a nug is.
A nug is like a... it's like a... It's like a clump of marijuana, basically.
And nugs come in different sizes.
I'm not doing this with you. Let me finish.
But you're like, I'm not buying that. It's not Majesty's royal, whatever the.
I'm not doing this. So in terms of California, actually not the ballot itself, but it's not a pre-ballot. I'm totally blanking on the word right now.
It's a proposition, like probably. Huh?
Yeah,
there is a proposition.
Proposition
out
420.
Now there is a proposition to fully legalize it in California for November. So that's going to be happening. Fine. Berkeley wants to do this. I mean, Amoeba Berkeley wants to do this. I wouldn't be surprised if San Francisco were to do this next, and maybe even LA. I mean, this is something that makes sense and is funny. So, and you can get if you go to Amoeba, you can kind of get everything you need.
You think you'll have Weed Store Day?
I wouldn't be. 420 is pretty much Weed Store Day.
I think every day is Weed Store Day with weed.
at least you know what, in California, probably it is.
So I guess we clearly all don't know what we're talking about, but if you want to learn more about weed and you like punk rock, go start listening to Damien from Fucked Up's Turns Out a Punk podcast.
Because, yeah, he knows this better.
Well. He has a cannabis show that's on Vice, but more so than that, he just, like, in the past week, launched a new sub podcast called Oil and Flowers. That is him and a co-host whose name I don't have in front of me, and I feel bad for that. Talking about weed and cannabis culture things and everything else. So
there's a lot of sub podcasts.
Damien likes to make other podcasts and then just release them on the feed of the Turned Out a Punk podcast. So he has like Turned Out a Punk, and then he has the Footnotes shows, and then he has like his wrestling shows. And now he has a weed show that's on there.
I gotta say, boys, as a non-weed smoker, I find like weed discussion like exhausting. You know what I mean?
It's really boring if you don't
Of course, then again, I could talk about, you know, Melvins for 3 hours. It'd be like, and did you check out this single? And be like, oh god, I wanted to die after the first 10 minutes. Or Gabriel McNair, for that matter.
Yeah, well, we're not making a Gabriel McNair sub podcast. You can go start your own feed for that. But anyways, yeah. I listened to Oil and Flowers in the car today for the first time, and it is like, if you want to find out what's going on in that world, it's definitely where you could go and figure that out. I had no idea what the fuck anyone was talking about on that show, like alphabet soup of acronyms that I have no knowledge about. But anyways, it's there. Go check it out, or go to Amoeba and get your weed there with your records. If you're at Amoeba buying records, you should buy the Dirty Nils record, specifically Higher Power, the one that just came out, because it's really good. Speaking of which,
I did
see that seg. That was a good seg. I just did a good seg.
It was a good seg.
Congratulations, Adam, on the seg. Adam, anyways,
you hereby are awarded the best seg of the evening. Congratulations.
Yes, the
no close second.
Well, the close second was also mine, so really I could just...
Adam,
but it wasn't very close.
I'm imagining like an Olympic scenario where like it's got like three things and Adam White is like jumping from 3 to 2 to 1 like while they're handing out medals.
His neck is heavily laden with medals.
Adam, I would win best SAG at that Olympics, and I would also win the falling up the stairs medals because I'm really good at that.
I was going to say, unfortunately, it's sort of like more like Special Olympics.
Adam White, you are the Michael Phelps of Segways. I will say that. I will say that to the public at large.
I was going to make some joke about that other guy, but I don't remember his name.
There's a guy who enjoys his marijuana.
Yeah, yeah. You're the that guy of podcasting. So anyways, the Dirty Nil has a video for the song Friends in the Sky, which is a song off of Higher Power. You can go find that video over on Punk News, and it's fun. So that's there. Does it bear discussion, or is it a music video?
I just have one thing to say. Music video is fun. I went to 3 shows last week. These guys were my second show. Adam, you were... I was on the fence with them the whole time. I got to tell you, Adam, you are so right about this band.
They were so fun.
So good. And great.
Adam has been forcing these Toronto area bands down our throats for as long as I can remember, and this is the first one that's really stuck with me. I like these guys a lot. I love the record. I love them live.
Yeah.
I think I've made that opinion known before, but yeah, I really like this record. Now, if I could only get into Pup.
I'm on this weird end of the curve with them where I've seen them live so many times that I can now minutely compare and contrast dumb things about shows that are taking away from my enjoyment of them.
Yeah.
I'll go see them and I'm like, they look kind of tired today. I've seen them be less tired, or like, this stage is a little bit too big than I'd prefer to see them on. I've seen them on slightly smaller stages that are better. And I'm walking away being like, everyone at this show was really fucking into that, and I'm here thinking about like, well, compared to the 15th time I saw them, this wasn't as good. About man, it's like, oh man,
you're just living for like the one song you've never seen them play live that you have a record of.
I know. Anyways, though, yeah, it's a fun video. Listen to Ricky. You should go see them.
Yeah, they were fun.
And yeah, I don't have the script in front of me anymore, so I don't know what the fuck we're doing. Are we done? Is it music time? Is it?
I think. I'm looking at it. It says we are. I have a song.
Do it then.
Should I just go into it?
Yeah.
Okay. So since we talked about Dead to Me's new song, which I adored, I thought I'd play kind of a weird track from there when Jack was not in the band. In 2011, they did a split EP on Suburban Home Records with the Flatliners. The Flatliners covered Straight American Slave by Oh god, I'm blanking on their name. Why? Hang on a second. Why am I blanking on this? God. Oh, Rocket from the Crypt. God damn it. Okay. Yeah, so they covered Rocket from the Crypt. Dead to Me covered Fugazi's Five Corporations, and it's awesome. Yeah, this came out... So, yeah, this is a... I can't believe this is already a five-year-old EP. It's one of my first 7 inches I think I ever bought. So, yeah, check that. The songs are on YouTube and stuff like that. And if you can get the 7-inch, it is a gem. It's a really great little release. So here is Dead to Me covering Fugazi's Five Corporations.
We're back. That was a show. John, any parting words to the people?
Cats in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when. You know we'll have a good time then. You know we'll have a good time then.
That is
weird. Like that. That's the end.
See you later.